Hi there, and welcome to another episode of Experience Matters, the podcast from iCrossing that really gets under the skin of how to create effective interactions for brands. The most important thing about an experience is the audience, obviously. If they can't use it, it won't work. And really understanding those audiences is absolutely key to creating good stuff. Now, it's not only understanding the audiences, but we're all impacted by biases. We know that now. Behavioural science has taught that. So key to understanding our audiences is also understanding the marketing biases that are around us. So today, we're joined by not just three experts from iCrossing, but I believe three experts in the industry that are going to really lift the lid on audience understanding and show us how we can do it all so much better. I'm joined by Charlotte, Maria and Georgia. We'd like to introduce yourselves.
Yeah, my name's Charlotte and I'm an experience analyst here at iCrossing.
Hi, I'm Maria and I'm the head of audience intelligence here at iCrossing.
Hi, I'm Georgia and I'm the audience intelligence analyst at iCrossing.
Brilliant. So thank you very much for giving your time and joining us today. I know you're all very busy. Maria, can you talk a little bit more around audience intelligence? I mentioned the word personas. You tell me off every time I do it. I'm sorry. That's the last time I'm going to mention it on this podcast. So why is audience intelligence different?
So just to give a bit of a background to listeners on the word persona, we do really feel like it has old school connotations with assumption-based kind of builds of named audiences. Things like Jack loves coffee, walks on the beach and kickboxing on the weekend that are really based on nothing really other than our own kind of assumptions, stereotypes. And that really did, it made the word persona feel not very grounded in data and real insight and very fluffy. And it, I think, then doesn't mean as much to clients when you say, oh, we'll make some personas. So it was really important for the team to rebrand that word to identities or audience identities, which really helps us reform and re-narrate the power of building audience identities and the value that they do provide.
That's great. And kind of the way you described personas then, I know that's very much fueled also by marketing biases, isn't it? And we're going to come on later to talk about that. Yeah. But back to audience intelligence, can you just talk a little bit more detail about how it's different from how other approaches to understanding audiences?
Absolutely. So our approach to audience intelligence is rooted in digital data, which allows us to access observed data pools and insights at scale, ensuring that they're hyper-relevant. We can dip in and out at any moment in time. So it's not those kind of long winded research, traditional research pieces, which can take months to source the people, to survey, to analyze the data. And you also have a bit of a what we call like a survey test mentality, where when you are given a survey to fill out, you feel like you're taking a test and you tend to answer the way that you think the person surveying you wants you to answer. So there sometimes can be slight mistruths. So what we love to do is always rely on, or try and rely as much as possible on, what we can observe. You get a lot more deep, rich insight in observing behaviours than having someone recall their behaviour. There's an example which I use quite a lot with the team and with clients, and they set out a task for someone to write down how they make a cup of tea. And they went through all the steps, and then they observed them doing the exact same task, but there were little minute behaviours, like shaking the sugar before they ripped it open and poured it into their cup, that they didn't write down as a step. But that could be so powerful. That could mean that for those products, the people selling those little sugar sachets have a little tear thing, or have two sections, just things like that that could really enhance the experience of a customer by just observing slight behaviours that you wouldn't recall.
The details.
Yeah. And it's so interesting being able to observe them then and kind of really unlift the behavioural truths. And yes, I love the example around a cup of tea. You also mentioned dipping in and out and this idea of speed. And I think so often you kind of get bogged down in research, don't you? It takes ages to do. And just this kind of speed and agility to kind of get to the answers quickly. Yes. Georgia, could you give us a real life example of where kind of audience intelligence has come to the forefront?
Yeah, definitely. Just thinking of one that we've worked on recently for a beauty brand. We kind of looked into uncovering global perspectives on women's mental health. So just to kind of give a bit of context of the tools that we use to do that. So one of the tools that we use is called GWI, or Global Web Index. And this is basically a bank of, I think it's over about 50,000 attributes that cover over 50 global markets. And it's basically, yeah, an accumulation of survey data across those markets. And what we do is we use those attributes and we kind of layer them on to each other to build our audiences in there. And then we can ask those survey questions to that audience, essentially. And then on top of that, we also layer on data from social listening, which is we use on a tool called Brandwatch. And basically what we do is we write a query based on relevant keywords. So in this context, it was maybe anxiety, depression, and feeling stressed, and kind of how those audiences will be talking about that. And then what we were doing in this was we were looking at different life stages of those audiences as well. So we were looking at kind of university age girls, people at the start of their career, midlife, and then also, you know, retirement age. And basically what that did was allow us to uncover how these people were experiencing mental health, and it allowed us to address opportunities that we could support this beauty brand with content for addressing those challenges and the barriers that they were facing within the space, and content and where they're found and online, and
such a great example, such a worthwhile example as well. And what I really picked out then as you were talking was this kind of building up of layers, was using the different tools to not just kind of get one answer and then take that answer and run with it, but actually layer it on to what else you're finding, and ultimately going back to Maria's point is getting to the truth, the observable truth of how people behave.
100%. I think it's so important to have like several sources of truth, like not just relying on just survey or just this, just that, the other, but kind of taking it all and like holistically, and making sure that we have that complete understanding so we know where their gaps are and what they're struggling with and how we can address that with content or messaging or anything that the brand wants to speak to that audience through.
So amazing, so fascinating. Charlie, I'd like to build on that.
Yeah, we can also use the same the same tools and insights to kind of gain a really deep understanding about how these audiences think and feel towards brands, their perception towards them, their sentiment towards them. And we have also started using it for user journey mapping as well. So yeah, there's a lot we can do with these tools and a lot of insight we can glean for clients and brands to really kind of get to grips with.
It's great, and we've covered off kind of content then, and kind of, but does it go further? Does it impact search and how it then influences our search strategy and enabling people to discover our work?
Yeah, I mean, we build a lot of our audiences that we build, we look into the searches that they're making, and we build that into strategies as well, and it feeds into kind of like what our SEO teams do here. And
the searches that matter.
That's absolutely fantastic, and I think it's also easy to jump into actually just defining the experience and forgetting about how people are getting there. And what you're doing there just enables that. And obviously, a lot of this is around data and real-time data. And going back to the point you mentioned at the start, Maria, you said about the nimbleness of this and actually using kind of stuff that's there. So could you talk a little bit more about real-time data and how that actually works in audience intelligence?
Absolutely. So a lot of our work, as Georgia mentioned, is an overlaying of data points to provide that 360 view on our clients' most valuable audiences. And a lot of that comes from real-time sources like our social listening through Brandwatch. We can dip into that at any moment in time. We can also backdate, which is always really valuable. Trend data, we use Google Trends, obviously, and things like Answer the Public, which can give you more real-time search queries. Google Keyword Planner, we are 3 weeks in delay of those search volumes. So where we have a lagging there, what we found really valuable, especially for the kind of content and SEO teams, is our search and social listening combo, which is a really popular product, where we identify the real-time engagement themes and priorities of audiences and match those to the search demand. So you're getting the engagement and the demand to be able to fulfill the intent and the real need in the middle there. And that's proven incredibly valuable because sometimes there'll be a social trend or engagement priority that hasn't yet gained the search volume behind it yet. So we can identify those opportunities, give them to the SEO and content teams to produce a bit of content before anyone else has had the chance, and we're really jumping ahead and being able to facilitate or provide the right experience or content or fulfill a need before anyone else has identified it.
Fantastic. This goes back to the term that kind of Georgia was talking about, wasn't it, around the layering of different sources.
Absolutely.
Together into one piece. I think every time I work with the audience intelligence team, there's a new tool I learn in almost every conversation. Have we covered off all the tools, or is there others that you want to kind of share?
So we use Captify Sense as well, which is a cookieless search intelligence tool, which is super cool, and it's definitely, it's one of my favourites. Searches on Google are obviously private. You tell Google things that you wouldn't tell your wife or your best friend. But Captify Sense allows you to get a slight inclination as to who people are behind those searches. Very top level, very compliant, nothing specific, but starts to form kind of affinity, interests, attributes of the types of people behind those searches, which sometimes we use as a starting point to then go and build our audience identities from, because we've understood the people behind the searches to then be able to say, right, these are the types of cohorts and identities that we can start building from that search data.
I'm loving this. You're almost like the conductors, aren't you, of the different tools, and kind of bring them all together. Something that's key to our work at iCrossing is testing and learning and kind of trying out ideas. Charlotte, how does the role of audience intelligence play in test and learn?
So we create our audiences and it feeds into our paid media teams and what they do. We're kind of constantly creating nuanced audiences and test audiences. We tend to create for our clients a heartland audience, a growth audience, and a test audience. So the heartland audience is often who they know about already. They're their core audiences, if you like, and then growth audience, the individuals that they want to grow. And then test audiences are those nuanced audiences that maybe without the support of audience intelligence, the client might not want to go for. But we utilise these test audiences, send them off with our paid media teams, and they will test them. And often we find that these are more engaging. We have quite a good example with one of our business investment brands, where they had consistently been targeting CEOs and CFOs on LinkedIn. We ran with one of our test audiences, which was a more nuanced audience, and they hadn't gone after this audience before on LinkedIn. And I think it was managers. Mm. And actually, their engagement was much higher than their heartland audiences. So,
and that came, sorry to interrupt you.
No, go.
Came from an insight that, yes, the CEOs and the CFOs might be the ones making the decisions, but the managers will be the ones that want to impress them and might bring them solutions.
They'll be doing the legwork, if you like,
yeah.
And the research. So they're going to be the ones that are engaging with that type of content more so than the CEOs.
And just the way that we work and kind of direction that kind of took, the nimbleness of audience intelligence just enables that flexibility.
Yeah.
Which is great to see.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just kind of just proves the point as well of that easy to refresh insight. Mm. We have access to this information quite quickly. Mm. So
perfect. And talking about the access to information, one of the things I enjoy most working with iCrossing, not only working with brilliant people like yourselves, is that we're supported by Hearst, the big magazine publisher. There's nothing better spending lunchtime reading Cosmopolitan. But I know that's also really important for your work as well. And Maria, could you just talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So a lot of the time, clients will come to us and want to know what the next big thing in beauty is, or how to align themselves with beauty groups and beauty enthusiasts, and the access to Hearst really is the Google Search Console data that we, not sure how Magician Dan has given us access to that, but we're able to see the top performing keywords and content across all of the Hearst publications around any sort of category, so we can see what's trending in hair care based on the content that's been published across any Hearst magazine online, and how they're ranking and how that's performing, which is just glorious insights that we really love. And it's honestly, it's such a gold mine of insight and information.
It's so good to see all this kind of rich data that we get from the Hearst publications. But of course, it is only data, and we need to ensure that it's meaningful for our clients and that they can action off the back of it. Georgia, do you want to talk a little bit more about how we take this data and make it more actionable?
Yeah, 100%. So it's really important that when we pull together our audience insights that it doesn't just go off to the client and then sit there on a shelf and never get looked at again. So what we do is we kind of pull together some really nice recommendations for the client. So this could be content recommendations, it could be site structure. So for instance, like Maria was saying, we've discovered for one of our clients that audiences like to kind of see beauty content as a overarching site rather than in silos for hair, beauty, skincare. We kind of uncovered that there's a lot of affinity interest there, so they prefer to, you know, view that as an overarching interest. We also do targeting frameworks, email marketing recommendations. We like to really break it down and make sure that there's those insights ready for them to use.
That's brilliant. So we're kind of reaching those audiences at all different levels. And of course, once we've done that, there's an opportunity to kind of get really emotional and really kind of get a deep understanding of how we can influence these audiences. Charlotte, do you want to talk a little bit more about kind of the emotional, kind of really understanding the behavioural truths of the audience?
Yeah, so the tools that Georgia touched on before, we can really delve quite deeply into how our audiences are kind of thinking and feeling and the emotions that they're going through, really, and capitalise upon them to get them to convert or meet whatever the objective is that our client has. An example of this where we've done some user journey mapping for one of our clients in the past. Again, it was business investment. And we went quite deep into this, didn't we? So we had a look at all their digital touch points, but also using social listening, we delved into how they were feeling and thinking at each point of their journey, the frustrations they were feeling, around not being able to secure investment, if you like. And then the client could then take all of that away to meet those concerns or frustrations or even joys with the content that they need at the right time, on the right channels.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And kind of really digging into, I like the behaviours that are then joy and kind of concerns and using relevant content now to kind of address that. But I think we're talking very much about the now. And of course, this isn't just about the now, it's about the longer term objective of those brands. And Maria, would you like to talk about the role that audience intelligence plays in the longevity of brands?
Absolutely. So with audience intelligence, we really strive to better understand the cultures around brands rather than just take what the narrative that the brand is trying to portray and get across. I think gone are the days where you identify a USP for your brand and just push that to market and just shove it on people and hope for the best. What audience intelligence allows us to do is understand the culture in which people are living around that brand and identify ways to better integrate into their culture, into their lives, better support them in the journey, their journey stages to a certain action or behavior, their different need states, and identifying those ever-changing behaviors, needs is only going to help support you pivot and realign to customers' needs and behaviours as a business. And I think there's been some really nice opportunities for the audience intelligence team to actually support product development for a number of our clients to understand, actually, this is your product. We've had a listen to what people think. We've done social listening. We've done search listening. We've done bespoke surveys and actually identified that they like it, but this could be better, or that we've observed a natural experience that people are really enjoying. One of the quite popular examples at iCrossing was for a gift experience brand. And we were trying to identify new experiences that they could productize. And we listened and found out that a lot of people enjoy high tea, but they want to get a little bit tipsy. And thus Tipsy Teas was born. And we were able to then source lots of different providers of Tipsy Teas. That was kind of spotlighted on the website. And it really tapped into something that people were enjoying naturally, that we could productize and realign one of the kind of main categories of the business too. So it's really, it's listening to what people want and facilitating that, or meeting that need better with by the brand or the products or the services that they offer.
That's so fantastic. And it's so satisfying, isn't it, when you go in to do a piece of communication for a brand, but then actually coming away and changing and developing the product. And it just shows you how valuable audience intelligence is in doing that. And of course, you know, we've talked about it, we do it day in and day out. But of course, there's a lot of challenges that brands have in understanding audience intelligence. And what are they, Charlotte, and how can you overcome them?
I mean, we've talked a lot about these kind of outdated personas. A lot of brands are kind of quite stuck on these. And it's really difficult for brands. They don't necessarily have the tools available to them to do like the proper in-depth audience intelligence that we do here. And they don't necessarily have the time either. So that's what we're here for, to just really provide those.
It's so true, isn't it? Throughout my career, I've often get told to use personas, and then you actually look at when those personas were created. They're often kind of years and years and years, if not decades ago, and yet they're still telling to use them. And
that's a really nice point that I just wanted to build on from Charlotte. And Charlotte mentioned growth test and Heartland growth and test audiences earlier. Sometimes businesses and brands can get really stuck on who they think their audiences are and think, right, let's just keep talking to these same people, and some of them, their customer base is aging out or is dying off, and they're not that bad.
No bit.
Or is what's a nice, not morbid?
No, that's great. Let's stick with morbid. People are dying. It happens every day.
So some of their customer base are aging out or dying, and they're not getting that next generation of audiences through, and they're not understanding the changing needs of their customer base. So I think Charlotte really nicely put that they don't have time. They think what they... or this persona work, that'll do. They know their customer. And what we love to do is really turn that on its head and challenge those assumptions of what brands think their customer base is, and provide them with options. Identify small niches of audiences or customers that are really good, we've seen massive growth in. So let's push more effort towards them. Or these little pockets of test audiences that we can use through paid media and fail fast. It sounds negative, but we can quickly test an audience. If it doesn't work, we turn it off. We use one of the targeting frameworks that Georgia builds out of the audience intelligence work. We give that to our wonderful Sandra or Alice from the paid media team. They activate it. If it doesn't work, the results aren't giving, we turn it off, and we just keep testing. And it helps to always kind of refresh who we're trying to speak to. Otherwise, I feel like brands can get stuck talking to the same people in a bit of an echo chamber.
So that's really interesting, Maria, isn't it? And thinking then around the nimbleness of actually being able to keep people up to date. The world changes every day, and so do people's behaviours. But it's not just about today, though. It's about the future as well. And we talked about longevity for brands, but what is the future for audience intelligence? What are we going to see change?
Well, I know that there's an AI looming over us, and we have kind of dabbled, and Magician Dan, who I'm sure everyone's very excited to meet now, has kind of helped us get get into the AI space. We have the search and social listening product, which I spoke about, now has an automated version, kind of a self-service, if you will, called IX Pulse, where we match the search demand and the social listening, normalize the numbers to give a score which really identifies those sweet spots between what people are engaging with on social and what they are actively searching, what the commercial viability is of that keyword or that search. And just to go back to a little bit on the why we always look at both of those sides of the coin. Social media, if you were to search in Instagram cats, it's all these beautiful fluffy images of cats. You normally present your best self on social media. Life is shiny and perfect, except on X, then you might get a little bit spicy. But if you start searching cat on Google, it's why is my cat trying to kill me? Why does my cat keep throwing up? It paints a more of a real experience.
People live their best life on social media exactly. and their real life on Google.
Yeah, that's exactly. So sometimes when we as marketers get wrapped up in like sustainability, this was a big one for us a couple of years ago. One of our clients came to us and was like, we've got this whole range of zero carbon emission jeans. And they were like, people will love it because sustainability is so massive at the minute. But actually there is zero search demand for sustainable jeans or zero emission jeans. It was a nice to have. Things have obviously progressed, but they just went off the social media trend and people giving lip service to wanting to buy sustainably. But actually, really in the UK, a lot of people feel outpriced by eco-friendly products and feel like it's more of a luxury. If they maybe had two options of jeans and they were the same price and one said eco-friendly, that might be the little push. They're like, oh, we'll go with the eco-friendly ones. But it's not an active purchase driver. Back then, things have changed. But it's just important to get both sides of the coin so that we're not just enamored by this social media trend and get caught up, because it can go awfully wrong. There was a couple of years ago, the trend for fox eyes was massive, which was kind of a makeup do.
Please do explain that. I was thinking cat's eyes in the road, fox yeah. eyes, no, fox makeup. Eye. Okay.
Was makeup. And loads of beauty brands, or a couple at least, jumped on it. And actually, it was a little bit racist. And no one had taken the time to investigate. They just thought, fox eyes, trends, quickly, let's jump on it. But actually hadn't delved into the detail behind that. So that's an important job that we also do.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. And Charlotte, could you just repeat the antidote that you said then in the middle? I thought that was great. And people would live their lives.
People live their best lives on social media and their real lives on Google.
Absolutely fantastic. And that's such a nice kind of insight kind of to take away from this talk. OK, that's fantastic. We're coming towards the end of this first part on audience intelligence. And we've covered a lot there. I hope you've got a real clear understanding of how you get to the behavioural truths of those audiences by layering together those different tools and those different insights and doing it in a way, conducting, I thought was a good way in my head as I could hear you all talking. And then what we'd like to close on is just a few real kind of clear tidbits, one thing really for people to take and make a start in audience intelligence. What would that be, Georgia?
I think one of the main things to kind of take away is just that ultimately you probably are going to have these kind of biases as to who you think your audiences are. Brands are going to be going after who they think they want to go after, but that's exactly why what we do is so important, and we think that everything should be entirely data-driven and using those several sources of truth to validate the holistic view of who that audience is and who you should be going after, and just being aware of your own bias and being aware that you might be thinking that way is really important so that you can kind of go a step beyond and then
fantastic.
Get that data
and that's,
behind
and that's
that.
Such useful advice, isn't it, for anybody working with audiences, is just putting their biases to one side. And I know Maria, yourself and the wider team is very passionate about around marketing bias and how that impacts our work and everybody at iCrossing. And can you talk a little bit more about what marketing bias is and why it's so important?
Absolutely. So marketing bias and kind of marketing privilege, we tend, I mean, the definition of having a bias is having a preference or a better opinion of something, a person, an idea or a thing, and a swaying towards that. And that, I think it goes hand in hand with marketing privilege. As marketers, we do come from the majority of us come from a very privileged background. It is one of the most elitist professions, especially in the UK. So a lot of the experiences that we as marketers have had is not reflective of much of the UK's population, and even globally. So by using our biases, our marketing privilege of our experiences growing up and what we've had access to and the opportunities that we've had to make decisions on what people are going to want, how they're going to want to be spoken to, engaged with, the experiences that we build for them and lead them on and lead them, build ecosystems around, is not representative, and we need to take ourselves out of it. There's been countless occasions where brands have really missed the mark, be that in doing an advert straight after a number of girls in London were very unsafe for sound cancelling headphones with a lady running through the streets of London, being tone deaf to experiences of the customers that they're going after can be really damaging for the brand.
Thank you, Maria. That is so interesting. And kind of being in this industry for so long, I have actually seen the impact of marketing biases. And it's so important that we remind ourselves on a daily basis. And I think if we could all open that up and have a discussion around that and those examples, really help it kind of bring to life for our listeners. Georgia?
Yeah, I think one example that I've kind of been interested in lately is about personalisation and balancing that with privacy. There's a stat I saw that I think it's 90% of leading marketers say that personalisation leads to profitability in marketing. But I think for a lot of audiences, it's not quite clear, do they actually want this personalisation and do they have the resources to make informed decisions on that? And, you know, we did a bit of social listening and out of that kind of came that, you know, with cookie consent, for example, a lot of people aren't necessarily accepting genuinely. It's more like I can't be asked, or what's this like annoying thing coming up, and it's not really reflective of genuine informed consent. And then looking kind of even deeper into that, we kind of found
just
that
is absolutely fascinating and something I haven't thought about until you just said it now.
And it's even so... between us, I was like, I don't give a shit. I don't care. I just keep clicking. And I think Nathan's even given me an app which like automatically consents. They don't get the pop-up. And you said, do you really care about it? And I was back. And that was my bias on that whole experience.
But consent is just such an important word and undermining it like that by, you know, with cookies. So interesting. Sorry, Georgia, I interrupted you.
I think it goes even deeper as well. When you look, there's a lot of groups that are actually disproportionately affected by this. So low-income people, I think it's 39% are aware of GDPR and understand what it is. And then when you compare that to the highest socioeconomic status group, 75% actually know what GDPR is and are aware of it. So they kind of maybe have more resources available to understand that and make those informed decisions on their data usage. And that lower income group as well, they not only are more concerned about how their data is used, but they're also not sure how to go about managing that. So I think it's really important for us to kind of understand that we might think, oh, everyone wants personalised experiences, but there's so much within that. And it's really important to kind of balance that need for personalisation and privacy and what the customer actually wants rather than just what we think they want, essentially.
And how do we use audience intelligence to ensure that we don't do that and that we are kind of neutral to the biases?
I think there is some questions actually in our survey data about how people feel about their personalised data being used. So I think that's really useful that we can use that to kind of inform. We can layer a brand's audiences onto that to see their attitudes about personalisation, and just kind of making sure like broader awareness pieces about data usage and how people feel comfortable. And I think, more systemically breaking down the barriers and understanding data usage and what that means for people.
With on your point, well, with the personalisation in particular, we use a really nice line for paid media and social media in particular is personalised media for the masses. So it feels personalised, but it's actually not. It's at scale and it feels personalised because we have deeply understood all of the affinity interests, the culture, the product wants, needs, the trigger points of cohorts of audiences. So larger groups, not individual specific people where we aren't, it might not be GDP compliant or cookie consent hasn't been consensual, if you will. So we come at it people by their kind of psychographic groupings, which makes it feel personalized. But actually, it's just you go like, oh, they've understood me. But we've actually just understood a group of people of your likeness.
And Charlotte, did you have an opportunity to work on this with Wales and the COVID piece that you did?
Yes. So I think this one was actually quite close to my heart. It was one of the first projects I worked on when I joined the audience intelligence team. And we built audiences around vaccine uptake.
Okay.
And it was really interesting because I think talking about the COVID vaccine is such a personal thing. You either had it or you didn't. I know there were lots of kind of concerns and whatnot. When we built the audiences, I think we had an assumption that the non-vaccinated were anti-vaxxers and they might have been conspiracists. But when we looked a little bit closer at the social listening and the conversations that were being had amongst these audiences, they were some really vulnerable communities. Mm. They'd faced years of kind of austerity from the government, and it was just a matter of trust. They didn't want the vaccine because they didn't trust anything that was being endorsed by the government. Mm. And it was quite sad, some of the conversations that were being had online around the vaccine rollout and how they felt about it. And then what made it even more sad is there are people making this assumption and thinking that they're conspiracists or this, that and the other. And again, it's just another example of biases and where we need to challenge these. And
stereotypes.
Yeah, and stereotyping these people that are just having a tough time. They've been faced with, you know, their hearts hit by the fuel crisis, by the cost of living crisis, and they're just watching the government and thinking they're not doing anything. Why should we take your vaccine? And you can completely, you can get it, can't you, really?
Like, yeah,
you can totally sympathise. But from there, we could then speak to these customers differently, and it was about gaining their trust again and about, just really trying to
Reassure
them.
Yeah. Understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And empathise, I think that's a big one.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
This is fascinating, marketing biases and realising how important it is in addressing them. Georgia, can we just get into a little bit more detail and how can we make sure that we can target kind of diverse audiences?
Yeah, I think actually with our audience insights, we'd kind of rather not go for those diverse audiences because with digital we can be so specific to that audience and their needs. So it's really important to kind of pivot so that we're targeting based on those, you know, psychographic behaviours and interests to make sure that the right message is meeting the right audience at the right time rather than just kind of going for the masses, you know, as Maria touched on earlier as well.
Thank you, Georgia. That's fascinating. You talked then about psychographic behaviours. Maria, do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Of course, yeah. So psychographic behaviours are ones that help us kind of bucket behaviour types into really kind of succinct groupings. So when Charlotte was discussing about the vaccination psychographics, we had cynics,
unvaccinated, I can't remember the names of them, but people that were kind of really excited to have their vaccine, to get back to normal.
So it's kind of, it's psychographics are more a way of thinking than a demographic, is the way that I would distinguish it. Demographic is very much age, gender, location. Psychographic is grouping by the way that you think.
Yeah. And that's so important. It's why we don't use the P word anymore and really focus in on the intelligence of the audience.
I think there's a really nice piece about the move towards psychographics over demographics.
Great.
We are quite keen as well as a team to, where possible, not have to rely on demographics, where it's age brackets, where it's gender, because we are moving into a world that is a lot more fluid. Age boundaries are more fluid. People are having different life events at different ages and varying ages. Gender is a lot more fluid in the way that people buy based on their gender. It is not as traditional as it once was. It's not just the mother buying for the household anymore. The dad goes out. You've got multi-generational families. You've got mixed families. You've got blended families. So we're living in a world where demographic profiling can sometimes, not all the time, when it's needed and when it is a requirement based on a health concern, based on when you can get your pension, for example, those are quite set in stone demographic brackets that you might have a disease more when you're 50 plus, or when you're under 10, that's when it's important to distinguish. But if possible, we'd rather go for the psychographics, the affinity interests and the culture that make up these people's lives.
So we've talked a lot about marketing biases and how, as humans, we need to be aware of them. But as we've already talked about today, the role of kind of tools and AI, that's audience intelligence, playing a more important role. How can we ensure, Charlotte, that when we're talking about algorithms and stuff like that, that they don't come with their own biases?
As we've talked about kind of throughout, we take a holistic approach to all of the insights that we pull together for our clients. So that's across survey data, search and social media. And everything throughout the social listening is all kind of like public data. It's what consumers are talking about online day to day. And it's really just layering up these different data points that kind of just tries to ensure that there are no biases with what we're presenting our clients with.
Thank you, Maria. We started the podcast, didn't we, dismissing the P word, the personas, but it was so good to bring it back at the end. And P going forwards does not stand for personas. It stands for psychographic, and how valuable that is in bringing to life the true understanding of the audiences that we need to create experiences for. Thank you so much for giving up your time this afternoon. As always, every time I talk to you, I learn so much more around audience intelligence and getting to the truth of the humans and how they make decisions towards our work. If we could just finish the session, just all of you, just each naming one thing that really drives you and makes you happy in your work.
I think mine is actually proving people wrong.
That's great. I love that.
Proving people's assumptions wrong.
Brilliant.
You totally just stole mine.
Sorry about that.
I love challenging assumptions or surprising people. I think one of my favourite things to say is if the ladies deliver a bit of audience intelligence work and a client goes, oh, that's interesting, that's terrible. We have not done our jobs right. I want them to go, oh my good Lord, why are we not doing this, this and this? Why are we not on this platform? Why aren't we optimizing this? Why aren't we doing this? And I want them to be inspired.
Great. And Georgia?
I think it's really nice seeing how much our work really feeds into so much of what the agency does, whether that's SEO, whether that's paid media or business solutions and transformation strategy. It kind of just covers all those points, and it's really nice to see the value of what we've done. And obviously working alongside such amazing ladies too.
Amazing. And can you leave your audience intelligence in the workplace, or do you find you take it home with you on the journey home? Do you start looking at people and start thinking, hey, I wonder what that's telling us about their behaviour?
I do it when I watch adverts. I'm like, you keep telling me what to do and I ain't doing it. And I'm like, they haven't understood their audience, right?
Brilliant.
I'm quite good at leaving it behind, I think.
Charlotte, Maria and Georgia, thank you so much. This has been Experience Matters from iCrossing, and we look forward to joining you next time.